Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's nice to be here today. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about a topic that usually empties rooms, makes people check their email, renew old acquaintances, gets a cup of coffee, and so forth. But I think, you know, this is a topic that is kind of a glue that holds together many of the assessment documents we do. It's also a critical ingredient in terms of future management, especially with respect to annual catch limits as well as sectors management. So before I begin, I'd like to take an opportunity first to acknowledge a lot of the hard work that was done at the center, my colleagues Susan Wigley and Amy Van Atten, the data support groups, and particularly I think it's important to acknowledge the work of the observers. This is a very difficult task, and the data that we have and information that we're going to look at today would not be possible without their dedicated efforts. And then finally, the fishermen who take them out and more importantly, bring them back safely and everything. It's just a tribute to a lot of different groups working very, very hard. This is a discussion on consultation and prioritization. It was one that we began last June. There were some discussions about a data report, similar to the fisherman's report that we do for our surveys. The importance of this is that it is an interactive dialogue, not only on what the science is saying in terms of allocation of resources, but also what the interactions with various management measures are. And as fishermen and managers, you're all well aware of that interaction and how things change very rapidly. So this process is one where we are trying to pull the various pieces together and look at all of the information as a coherent whole. Now, there are four different aspects to this topic, and there are three separate reports that are available, as well as two reports that are on the web and are available for perusal. The first of them is sort of the annual discard report. This is a very, very large report, and I haven't printed it out. There is a skeleton document which gives a summary there. We didn't want to print it out because we would translate a fisheries problem into a forestry problem by doing so. So there's quite a bit of information there. The second is the update of the filtered days, that is applying the technology, applying the estimation methods outlined in the standardized bycatch reporting report, which is targeting a coefficient of variation of 30%. We have an omnibus amendment which was based on the 2004 data. Now, for the first time, we're looking at an update of that information based on the 2007 to 2008 data. The third topic that I want to talk about is the 2009 prioritization. Basically, this is the first out-of-the-blocks kind of comparison in terms of where our what we saw for that 2007-2008 period, what the initial allocations are, and then to impress or to discuss the limitations associated with implementation of these allocations of sea days. There are some very, very important limitations, and I think this is where, in fact, the observer and program, the Science Center, the stocks assessment people, and the council can have an important dialogue on these. And then finally, there's a proposed sea day schedule. So let's talk first about this annual discard report. It is available on a website. There's a skeleton document that's available outside for those coming back from getting coffee and so forth, may have seen it out there. There are other pieces of information on it, but it provides kind of a general background or the data that were used, annual report tables, the five do's and 500 don'ts for cautionary notes to readers, and kind of a summary list of the tables. And this was reviewed, and the format was reviewed by the NRCC in October of 2008, so forth. Now, this report is mandated under the SBRM. The reference to the Federal Register document is there. I won't read this to you, but it basically says once a year everyone will get together. We'll talk about updating this information. We're going to go through a set of partitionings of the data, that is, you know, number of observer C days scheduled, the percent of total trips by gear each quarter, by species group, so on and so forth. Well, you put all those different partitions together, and you have one very large report that has a lot of cross tabulations, a lot of empty cells. But you know, if you're curious about what's going on with, say, rye mouth or some other oddball species, you know, it you can find it in there. So it just gives a complete summary of all the observed discards and kept by all of the trips that have been taken. The data used, as I said, we used the July 2007 through June 2008. Although this is not immediately apparent to everyone, this was you know, very timely in terms of getting all this information together, not only because it required information on the observer data through those periods, but also from the standpoint of the vessel trip reports. So a lot of people, regional office included, you know, did a lot of work to make sure that these data were accelerated so that we have a report that reflects the most timely information possible. Also, these three reports that we're looking at here all have the same sort of basis, so that allows for comparisons between groups. And so we did have some exceptions there, you know, where there may not have been, say, mesh information or the information not yet computerized, or you know, it might have been an aborted trip or some other factor that caused an inability to use the data. But for the most part, it represents a full-scale use of the data. You know, there's a standardization in terms of converting information to live weight. And there, we try to use the same stratification. We use the same stratification as in the SBRM analysis. Now, the SBRM analysis is at an aggregated level. It doesn't have some things that are related to things like trip length, which are important for C-day allocation. So although this is an attempt to get everything kind of lined up, the data sets and the actual observable properties of fleets that allow observers to randomly select vessels are not entirely meshed up at this exactly. The annual discard report tables, there are a number of sections, and they are by species groups. They summarize also for individual species, and these takes and so forth are represented in terms of live pounds for some of the marine mammals and turtles. These, of course, are reported in numbers of individuals. So there's for those of you, now here's the list of the 500 don'ts. You know, these are not total discards are not estimated in this report. This is similar to the fisherman's report on surveys. You know, here's the lat lawn, here's what we caught, here's the strata it was in, and so forth. It's not the age-specific estimates of relative abundance derived through a survey estimation model. In the same fashion, this is not the information that's used to scale these discard rates up to total factors. So, and I realize I stand between you and lunch, and so I'll go. This one, there are like three separate slides available that you know, kind of provide some caveats on how to step away from this report and get an idea of what's going on, but it's not the not the synthetic summary of the information. The data, there are a list of species. Now, the main focus in the SBRM and the analyses that were done in there is species groups, more specifically federally managed species groups, and not on individual species, unless that happens to be a single species within the a fishery management plan, such as herring. Nor does it include a focus on fisheries or species which are managed exclusively by ASMFC or states. So, for example, there's no river herring component to this analysis, nor are the measures that are derived from the analyses sort of coincident with some of the other management measures of interest to the council, and I suspect that some of those will come up this afternoon. And, you know, so this is in part what the importance of the dialogue is. The other kind of maybe overarching aspect of all of this stuff is that there are trade-offs, and that certain things which are used for there's a finite number of days available. There's certain monitoring which is oriented towards compliance, and there's other monitoring which is oriented towards precision. The SBRM is oriented towards precision, that is, ensuring that you have precise estimates of the derived quantities. Compliance is a different matter. Compliance arises for quota monitoring. Compliance arises in catch limits. Compliance arises in endangered species and sectors. Right. So this just goes back and summarizes each of these tables. These tables are, because they are by fleet, stat area, species, statistical area, so on and so forth, get very large, and they are summarized in the analysis there. So let's talk next about the SBRM and the filtered days approach here. So as I said, the orientation is towards achieving a target level of precision across not only all of the modes, that is fleets that constitute various fisheries, but also the species of interest, the federally managed species. So in order to take that that analysis, we have to be careful about a couple things, and I'll talk about this when I give a little more detail on the importance filter. But the importance filter is a way you don't want to be chasing ghosts. That is, you don't want to allocate observer effort to precisely estimate very small quantities. You know, unless it's a marine mammal protected species or something that has a mandate to do that, when it's something that's a small quantity relative to the total stock, it's important that we get the whole and not, you know, focus on the individual tree and so forth. So the way that is accomplished is through the oh, this works, huh? Watch out, Gene. We do that through the importance filter, which looks at those fisheries which constitute 95% of the total discards for that species group, and those species or those fleets which constitute total 98% of the total mortality on the resource. Now, the reason we do it both ways: one looks at those fisheries which constitute the greatest contribution to the total discard for a particular species. The other one, the total mortality, says, okay, there are fisheries that may be well-conducted, clean fisheries right now, but because they land a lot of fish of various types, there's always a potential, like a strong year class coming through, which may change that fishery overnight into one which is encountering a lot of important species. So those two things are acting in concert. The total mortality filter, the good example of that, of course, is the strong year class of Haddock and its role in terms of showing up in a lot of places that it didn't show up before. So that's the reason there's a twofold thing. So it's to avoid having a lot of effort directed to improving the precision of insignificant quantities. And that kind of is crystallized here by looking at fishing modes, that is different fleets, and then you look at the cumulative discard rate associated with those fleets. And then it's just kind of a general rarefaction kind of process going on here in terms of, you know, in this instance or this example here, 9 fishing fleets constitute 95% of the total discards. The other 30 fleets really don't contribute too much to the total. So therefore, you would filter those fisheries out of the selection process. So this is just a rehash of the days that were used. Again, the main take-home message, which is, all right, you're probably thankful for that. I went forward quickly here. So there's 2007, July 2007 through June 2008 is the data basis for these. There are a couple new fisheries that were added as a result of this annual updating process. One was the Kong Trap and Hagfish Pot fisheries. Unfortunately, the Scottish Seine fishery is no longer with us, and that one is not in the mix right now. And the Mid-Atlantic Scallop Trawl Access Area fish fleet is now included. Again, another important part of this is that fleets are based on observable properties of vessels, not necessarily the target species associated with that, nor its intentions of the vessel on a particular day. The reason we use the observable properties is because we don't have a list from which we can randomly draw. On any given day, you don't know who's going for flatfish out of New Bedford. You do know who are large mesh trawlers as sort of a quantity going out of there, but you don't have that finer scale resolution that you would need in order to identify a suitable subset of vessels. And then, of course, after the fact, the few times I go fishing, I know that whatever I caught was my target species. So I don't know how that exactly plays into this or not, but maybe just as I said at the other meeting, I'm not a very good fisherman, I guess. Anyhow, the other part is, these are just a quick summary of what's included in the filtered sea days. Baseline sea days necessary for, sort of do all kind of thing. That is, if you took the sampling requirements associated with the most restrictive case, that is that information necessary to estimate every single cell in this tableau of fisheries and species groups, it would take 54,631 sea days. Now, the economic stimulus package might be able to cover that, but it's probably a long shot. When you take the filtering associated with that effort and look at it in terms of the 98% total mortality, the 95% total discards, that value comes up to be 15,125 days. So this is substantially more than is currently available. When we did the comparisons between this time and the last time in terms of the number of sea days available, in general we see a reasonably strong relationship between the two. There are a few oddballs there, and those are ones which have changed in their importance over time. So again, it kind of reinforces the notion that this information will change, that we are getting some significant information on that is changing it. So, for example, the New England small mesh otter trawl, last time most of the magnet was for skates. In this case, it's fluke, scup, and sea bass. Part of that is probably for improved status of scup and sea bass. This is, of course, a four-year change. There are differences associated with the New England large mesh otter trawl and ELGOT, of course. And those these details are in the formal report, but it does indicate that things change over time. So it's important to have this sort of feedback associated with those changes. The prioritization is where you get down. Okay, so now you have this ideal. You need 54,000 days. If you filter it on the basis of that first wave of criteria, you need 15,000 days. Now we have 6,000 days available to us. Those 6,000 days not only have some constraints on them, but they also are used for some compliance monitoring. So there were some changes that we are proposing. Of course, this is not the final end of this thing. This is just simply saying this is the change that here's what a change would look like. This is the first thing out of the blocks here. So we have the SE to get the performance standards, and then we say, okay, if we were to take those 6,000 days and allocate them proportionally across all of those days, and for those of you following along, this is the this three-page document, shortest paper ever prepared by the center, has a kind of a summary of the fleets, the sea days that are filtered by the 95-98%, the allocation if everything was allocated proportionally, and then there's the prioritized information, and I'll try to get to those before everybody goes to sleep here. Okay, the first one. There's the column one is the at-sea coverage. So this is the 15,000 days, the filtered days. The bottom line numbers here are the 15,000 days, 6,000 sea days, shortfall of about 9.3 million. That's not the important factor. This is the amount of days, and at the current rates, what that would entail. Columns two and three are important. One is, what would we do if we were simply to allocate those proportionally across all the fleets, and then the second one is to say incorporate the recommended or proposed or initial prioritization. That is the information there. So there are a couple of cells that are important. One is the industry-funded information that's for the scallop fleet, and then two, there's a row down there, right there, that has 1,940 days in it, which is the amount proposed for U.S., Canada, B-Day, and SAP monitoring for compliance. There's then a kind of a column which has the some footnotes, if you will, in terms of what species groups are driving the bus, which kind of decisions were made in terms of what was important, and but the big issue is the funding and restrictions on funding. Presently, 92% of the information is or the data that comes in is oriented towards New England groundfish. This is going to sell well here, but on Thursday it's not going to be a little bit different story. We'll talk to the Mid-Atlantic Council. Only 8% is used for Atlantic Coast observers, and the interpretation is that can be applied to New England groundfish species or fisheries that take New England groundfish as bycatch. That premise has been extended to include the monkfish as well as the fluke, scup, and sea bass allocations, and so that's where we get into our our optimization approach, which takes those three species groups into account, siphons off some stuff off the top to address information related to herring in particular. There's some for the shrimp fishery, some information, that some data taken for some of the open access scallop fleet and so forth. But right now we don't have a complete synthetic soup to nuts kind of optimization approach. It's more of a research topic, as well as, you know, these are primarily tools to guide your thinking, not definitive, you know, statements on the final word, so forth. Now, this year, the C-Day, 6,000 C-Day allocation is, you know, in the data you're looking at right now has about quota monitoring constituting about 31%. The statistical monitoring, that is information that's related to C-Day allocation, is and optimization is about 63% of the total, and then the rest of it's proportional or ad hoc. Proportional is that we try to cover on the basis of pilot coverage, that is, we're trying to get a certain fraction of the resource or the fleet activity covered via that kind of process. This is in contrast to in 2008, slightly higher C-Day coverage, but more of about a 48%. So it was more of a 50-50 split in terms of quota monitoring and so forth. So that's the big change in this. There's also, you know, the monitoring of total allowable catch is for, you know, U.S.-Canada, B-Days, special access programs, and so forth. This has value that goes beyond the precision monitoring in many ways. One thing, it has an infrastructure which allows for, you know, a rapid identification of vessels, but it also has its importance, and I think importance for sectors and ACLs, because there the potential observer effect is likely to be greater, could be greater, because the basis on which we will estimate the number of C-Days needed, that is, the underlying variance associated with discarding practices, will be changing. Presumably, I think that's kind of a given. What is not a given is what direction some of those things will go. So that highlights a huge issue in terms of monitoring for compliance, for monitoring of sectors. It's also kind of highlights an issue of small area estimation, what the statisticians call small area estimation. But it's basically, if you want to know how a city is oriented in terms of a political vote or public issue, you can get an aggregate estimate that's probably pretty good. If you want to know how each block feels about a particular situation or that same question, it becomes much more difficult, and your total sampling effort increases greatly. By the same token, if you want to know a smaller subset of the large mesh otter trawl fleet, which may constitute a fraction of a sampling effort for a particular sector, you're going to need two Italian here, so to my hands. You're going to need some measure which takes that additional variability into account, as well as the likelihood that there may be differences between the sector and the non-sector vessels in the fleet. So. 2009 is a transition year. We're going to try to implement some of this stuff on the optimization tool. The funds really aren't available yet. We don't really know what the overall budget is going to be and so forth. So this is a thing. And then there's just a quick little thing here. There was a consideration given to say, okay, well, what if we, instead of allocating 3,000 days like we've last year, Why don't we take it to a half, take it to 1,000, take it to 2,000, and so forth. So one of the trade-offs there was, you know, you have an infrastructure for quota monitoring, which would not be there if all those SAP days in U.S. Canada, nor would we necessarily have issues smooth sailing with U.S. Canada sort of negotiations and so forth. So our initial take on this, again, first cut was to say let's look what it looks like with 1,000 days less, so forth. And then finally, there's a sea day schedule that's on the web, and the fisheries sampling branch has that information as a proposed schedule, and so that just says here's where it goes. And let's see, okay. Okay, summary. Everybody's been waiting for this. So we have this monster report, the discard report, which is just a raw data report mandated by law. There's annual reviews on the strength and performances of the program, and this is a guidepost. It's not the final word. It's important that, you know, the current orientation is towards precision monitoring rather than compliance. It looks at species groups, not individual species or stocks managed by states or ASMFC and so forth. Improvements are possible, but funding constraints, that is the intended use of the data, it really is its most pronounced effect occurs with mid-Atlantic fisheries. And the SBRM is based on the general premise that the samples are representative. I think, you know, we have one of the best observer programs in the world in terms of ensuring that process is in place, and that, you know, we're trying to make sure that occurs. But, you know, it's if the observer effect, that is, having an observer on board influences things adversely or changes behavior, then of course your ability to your variance increases, your ability to separate variance from bias also increases. So, and then this is just some more stuff that I'd ad-libbed earlier about you know, serve as a basis for ACLs and so forth. And that's the end. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer questions and so forth. And I guess the other thing is the mechanism where we're this thing was, you know, the C-Day schedule starts April 1st. There's basically 50 days between then and now, and you know, I appreciate the opportunity, you know, hearing from the council and so forth in terms of inputs, constraints, so forth. So thank you.
Questions for Paul? Dave, good.
I actually have two. First, thanks, Paul. It was actually easy to understand. My first question is, has the discard rate in any species complex changed appreciably between this report and the last?
I think the table that is on the graph that if you see it in color, there'll be you can see there are five fleets in which the necessary data requirements were significant, had significantly increased, upwards of twofold change. That doesn't necessarily mean that the rate increased in terms of the average discard rate. It does mean that the variability associated with that set of species that were harvested did change. So that means we probably either learned more about the underlying nature of the variability with these fisheries, or there may be something going on with haddock, of course, you know, where the it constituted a greater fraction of the total for the fleet.
Okay. So. And my second question was, if you stick around this afternoon, I'm sure you'll hear plenty of discussion about whether we should have, you know, a census of a fishery or we should have an accurate and precise estimate. And my question is, as the 6,200 odd days that you've allocated this year, in your opinion, will that produce an accurate and precise estimation of those fisheries?
You save us a lot of discussion this afternoon.
Yeah, I think it has the potential, but it probably falls short of what is needed for a variety of reasons. One being the potential observer effect kind of thing, especially as the in some of the more radioactive species under consideration discussion. The other one I think is that the constraints that are applied and so forth result in very good coverage of groundfish, and most of the days that are used of those 1,900 days or proposed 1,900 days of the 3,000 days that were used last year actually work to improve the information at the stock level, not necessarily the species group level. So as a consequence, and as you saw in the GARM presentation and that information there, that information was very precise, in part because there was a lot of effort that allowed you to say go from that big aggregate and kind of winnow it down to say what was the discard rate of H2 George's Bank haddock. You know, so you know, as you, the more you funnel it down to get to that small area estimation, it gets more difficult. So I don't think I entirely danced around your question, but I am trying to answer it. So
let me just ask one more, then it's kind of like a follow up. Would, given the problems with censuses, I mean, we're about to conduct a census in this country, and given everything I've read about the census, that we're setting ourselves up for yet another huge waste of money and a big disaster. Is a census necessarily any more accurate and precise, given the failures in census, than a targeted random sampling of the fishery in terms of producing the accurate and precision?
Yeah, I think most statisticians would say you're better off with a good sample rather than a complete census. They have this, there's a Supreme Court case on what's called hot deck imputation, which is basically if you see a bunch of lawn furniture in front of a house, there probably is somebody living there. But you can't verify that, and you can't ever get to them. They're never recorded. So, you know, some jurisdictions would like to have hot deck imputation working for them, but you know they can't because it doesn't allow them to estimate a quantity. Same thing with homeless people, so forth is that. So, stretching far afield here, but for there is information associated with good random sampling with unbiased vessel selection that I think can be an important benchmark.
Sally?
Yeah, thanks. Paul, I think you did touch on this a couple of times, but I think it's worth clarifying, or it would be helpful to me. Over the past year, I think in the discussion of compliance with new monitoring requirements that we have as a result of catch limits and accountability measures, that the methodology and statistical targets, so specifically the no more than 30% CV that the SBRM sets out, have been extrapolated to look beyond bycatch and assumed to be an appropriate way to measure catch, total catch. So can you just clarify what aspects of a fishery does the SBRM and related distribution of observer coverage and the statistical targets apply? and what do they not apply to with respect to catch and bycatch? I think I understood what you were talking about with the U.S.-Canada area and the heavy coverage there, but if you could just clarify, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay. I think you're asking if could you use the Observer program as a basis for catch estimation, total landings, as well as total discards. We have looked at that, and in fact, that's one of the bases for saying, you know, do we have a reasonable sample that in fact is similar to the vessel trip reports or the dealer records. That validation is for some of the more intensely monitored fleets does in fact bear out in terms of, you know, monitoring things within statistical boundaries. Now, whether or not they're acceptable statistical limits is more, you know, a function of policy and management rather than science as to whether they're acceptable or not. But I think all of that is conditioned or predicated upon having a representative sample. So that's why, you know, it's very important for that process to sort of be unimpeded by any kinds of restrictions or things of that sort. So I'm not sure if I completely answered your question. Maybe I didn't understand it entirely, but
I think what I heard you say is that the intent of this was just to look at bycatch, not catch.
Yes, right.
Some components of some of the fleets. Some of the fleets are covered to a degree that you might be able to extrapolate catch,
yeah.
But not necessarily.
That's correct, right. Yeah, give you one of these.
And if I could, and not by design.
Not by design, that's correct, right.
Terry?
Yeah, thanks. Paul, on one of your figures where you were talking about filtered sea days for the 30% CV, you glossed over the fleets with pilot coverage, and I note that for the 2007-2008, there's 24 fleets, but there's 44 fleets. So are there some fleets without coverage or different?
Yes, different there are a lot of fleets without coverage. Some of that is related to constraints on allocation. I know that on Thursday. The absence of a lot of coverage on small mesh mid-Atlantic trawl fisheries will be of interest to the LOLIGO session there. Similarly, we have very poor coverage in terms of many of the lobster and crab trap fisheries. So there are quite a few fisheries where we have no information to use as a basis, and this pilot coverage is a backstop that says, okay, given how many, what the magnitude of estimated activity in terms of number of trips is then used as a basis for a proportional allocation to at least get off the dime and get some sampling there. So that's one.
Dr. Weinberg.
Thank you. Paul, in your table, table one on the back of your handout, I am comparing lines 9 and lines 21, and they both have under justification fish stock assessment optimization. But so line 9 is for large New England large mesh gillnet, and you're allocating. Well, the table allocates way more days than the proportional coverage. And then you've got the reverse for line 21 for New England small mesh trawl. Wondered if you could explain how that, the reasoning behind that.
Yeah, that's an important distinction. One of the factors is that the optimization approach looks at some of the data in a little more finer detail. Namely, it looks at trip length as one of the stratifying factors. So you're distinguishing trip boats from day boats, and in order to cover those fleets a little more finely in the prioritization, the data that's on that web page, you need to have a smaller area that needs to be identified and distinguished, so that you don't have, you know, rates that you're characterizing nearshore or inshore fish stocks from offshore larger duration trips. So,
Dr. Pierce.
Paul, will you be here this afternoon?
I think so.
Are you going to be here this afternoon? Because my question pertains related to whether you're going to be here or not. Because of the herring discussions we will have this afternoon, and this is an extremely important discussion as it relates to herring, but I don't want to get into it now if you'll be here this afternoon.
I guess if anything I say can be moderately useful, I guess I'll stay. But
you tell me what the answer is, and then I'll tell you if it's useful or not.
I've been there.
Well, so. If I may, Mr. Chairman, my point is that you made an extremely important distinction, and you made it twice, relative to precision and compliance, and that we may get precision but not necessarily compliance. Compliance issues are separate and distinct from precision. So this relates to our discussions this afternoon when we have a motion that this council will discuss about a 30% CV or a 20% CV to be used relative to the sea herring fishery and bycatch that might be occurring in the sea herring fishery, haddock or river herring or whatever else. So I wanted to get into that a little later on in greater depth, but my continued perception is that we can adopt a level of coverage that sea sampling coverage, observer trips that would correspond, for example, to a 30% CV or a 20% CV for that matter, and that might not necessarily produce a level of coverage that we as managers would feel comfortable with regarding or actually knowing the total catch or bycatch of a particular species. They're not necessarily related, yet we always talk about these CVs as if they are related, and that troubles me because it's all about compliance in the sea herring fishery and in other fisheries, especially once we get into sectors. So we need to make a distinction at some time, hopefully today, about the need for us to focus on compliance coverage versus the coverage that relates to precision. If you can answer the question now, I guess you can go home. But I know it's going to come up again. We're going to debate this afternoon. We're going to go on and on and on about, is it 30%? Is it 20%? And I'm always focusing on compliance, not necessarily precision.
I think the short answer is when you hear the term 30% CV, the next question should be 30% of what? And in this case, SBRM is based on 30% CV on aggregate species, if it's the multi-species groundfish. So when we have a 30% CV on groundfish, that standard is established on the basis of the 19 stocks in the multi-species large mesh groundfish. If it's 30% on herring, then it's 30% on herring, but it's not 30% on the 1A herring stock, it's 30% on the aggregate. So any time we're talking about precision, it's related to a quantity, which generally is of interest, and a more detailed interest to managers, because that sort of aggregate level of achievement of a precision is important in stock assessments in terms of quantifying magnitude of removals and so forth, but it doesn't have the same translation to management measures.
What role does the previous year or year's observer coverage data play in setting the following year?
SBRM. It's actually a critical component there. We are currently using the previous year's worth of data as a realization or a valid estimate of the underlying variability associated with capture and landings and discards within fleets. What we're not presently doing, which what I'd like to extend this to, is to condition those estimates on several years' worth of data. So you have kind of a blend of information from previous years where you may have fallen short 1 year and can capitalize on that in a subsequent year. At the same time, it's extremely important to make sure that the information is timely, that changes in fleet behaviors, changes in fishing patterns near shore, offshore, interactions with the general suite of management measures that are in place can have some dramatic consequences, we don't always get it right. There are times when I'm sure the small fleets are bugged because the previous year's activity was high and the variance was high, but that may not be the same condition in the current year. So the need for sort of feedback is important. The most important aspect of feedback is the previous year's worth of data, but then within year information is also relevant.
Okay, Tom Neese, do you have a comment? Okay, we're going to wrap this up. We're going to break for lunch. Before we do that, just remind the council that the Interspecies Committee is going to continue this discussion on SBRM on the 18th of January, February. So we'll pick up where we left off here. Also, before we break for lunch, I was handed a note. People should know that if you want to eat here, there's a buffet. It's about $10. And if you want to leave the property and take your car to the parking lot, grab a parking pass on the table out front to get back into the parking lot.
And that costs $10?
That's $10.
That's right.
So, all right, we'll break for lunch. Be back at 2. Sorry, Rip. I'm getting out of your way here.
No.